From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A hint that there may be progress in peace talks for Syria, CCTV's Jim Spellman has more.
A ceasefire in Syria could be hours or days away, according to the U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry.
We are, in fact, making progress, even as I stand here today. There is aid now getting through. The modalities for a cessation of hostilities are now being completed. In fact, we are closer to a ceasefire today than we have been. And I take nothing for granted about this.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad says his government is prepared to honor the ceasefire, but that a cessation of hostilities must not provide an opportunity for U.S.-backed anti-government forces to rearm and regroup. He says the ceasefire should be part of a larger effort to improve conditions in Syria and stop the flow of refugees.
It's not only about Syria, it's about the rest of the world. First of all, Europe should lift the embargo on the Syrian people. Not the Syrian. They don't make embargo on the Syrian government. It's against the Syrian people. Second, Turkey should stop sending terrorists to Syria. Third, as a government, we have to fight the terrorists, definitely. And we have to keep the living moving forward by any means in order to allow the Syrians to stay in their country.
Kerry expects the U.S. President Barack Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin to speak on the phone soon to finalize terms of the ceasefire. Meanwhile, some food is getting through to towns ravaged by the war.
This is the first convoy since July 2014, and the World Food Program is now providing family rations for all the 45,000 citizens that are remaining here.
But even as ceasefire talks intensify, the fighting continues. Weekend bombings in Homs and Damascus killed dozens and wounded even more.
The U.S. says no to peace with North Korea. The State Department said Sunday that Washington had rejected a North Korean proposal to discuss a peace treaty to formally end the Korean War because it did not address denuclearization on the peninsula. State Department spokesperson John Kirby made the comment in response to a Wall Street Journal article which said that the White House secretly agreed to peace talks just before Pyongyang's latest nuclear bomb test. That news article, citing, it said, U.S. officials familiar with the events, reported that the Obama administration dropped its condition that Pyongyang take steps to curtail its nuclear arsenal before any peace talks take place, instead calling for North Korea's atomic weapons program to be just one part of the discussion. Pyongyang reportedly denied that proposal, and its January 6th nuclear test ended the diplomatic movement, that according to the newspaper article. According to a report from Reuters, Kirby issued an emailed statement that read in part, quote, "To be clear, it was the North Koreans who proposed discussing a peace treaty," closed quote. India saw protests and sporadic violence this past weekend. CCTV's Shweta Bajaj has more.
There has been sort of sporadic incidents of violence that has been happening since Friday here in India and in Indian state of Haryana. This erupted because of a certain community called Jats asked for a reservation. Now, reservation, number of communities here in India have that. Technically, they are all are classified as minorities. Many of them are economically backward. Jats, though traditionally, are very affluent. They are a very powerful community, especially, for instance, in the state of Haryana, about 30% of the parliament in Haryana actually belongs to the Jats, but they have been asking for a reservation. Now, this has happened because in the earlier regime, when the Congress government was in power, they did get reservation. That was taken back. They feel that their power in the state has been wielding. Before the current chief minister, who happens to be not a Jat, before that, for two decades, about 20 years, Haryana actually had a chief minister who was from the Jat community, so they feel that their power is wielding. This evening, there were 74 columns of army that were brought in. 12 people have lost their lives really in this violence, six of them in the last 24 hours. Over 150 people have been injured. Seven railway stations have been blocked. 700 trains have been cancelled in the last 48 hours that actually go through the state. The situation was such that it was getting very difficult because the highways that connect states in India, a major part of that actually comes from the state of Haryana. Later in the evening, there was a meeting between the Indian Interior Minister Rajnath Singh and the leaders of the Jat community. community. Few of the demands have been met. The basic demand was to have them as a backward class, or at least a reserved class, in the next parliament session in the state of Haryana. They've agreed to it principally. Depending on the agreement, they have decided to actually withdraw army, but only partly. Now, a lot of army was at the border, at railway stations, at canals, areas where there were a lot of violence that was happening for the last 24 hours. So army is now slowly being withdrawn. But really, situation at this point in time still remains extremely, extremely volatile. There are people in the state of Haryana, especially in the city of Rohtak, that haven't gotten out of their house in 24 hours to 48 hours. They're running out of essential supplies. The situation is such that the government has to bend down. But really, questions being asked on how far can the government agree on every single demand that comes from different communities like that. Because let's not forget, Jats essentially are not really backward classes here in India. In the state of Rajasthan, they are extremely affluent. They are also powerful and also politically influential.
An upcoming trip to Latin America by President Barack Obama is creating controversy across the region. For more on that, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo.
It's just impossible to believe that even Barack Obama would be so insensitive as to choose the precise date of the 40th anniversary of the 1976 military coup in Argentina to visit somebody, Mauricio Macri, who's the new president of Argentina, who was elected at the end of last November and took office early in December last year. And Mauricio Macri and his family are associated with the dictatorship because they were at the very least neutral. And probably quite supportive of the military dictatorship. You know, how can you be neutral about a dictatorship?
Yeah, moving train, that's right.
So,
and he's a political heir to them for sure. I mean, the faction that was represented or manifest in power at that time is the faction that backs him now, including his American sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely. And the clear sign of that is his decision during the week to order the security forces to repress demonstrations of protest against decisions by his government.
And to decide to pay $1 billion and change to the vulture funds on Wall Street.
Yeah, and it might actually work out to several billion, depending how the negotiations go. Mm-hmm. So it's very clear that the Argentinian voters who were seduced by his non-message prior to the November electoral campaign, which was a second round, and he came second on the first ballot of that round of presidential voting, and then managed to win by quite a narrow margin, 2%, on the second presidential round of voting. But he was very, very careful not to give a clear program. And if he'd given the clear program of what he's now implementing, he would not be president of Argentina now. So, it's very clear that most people wanted some kind of change because they're in Argentina, because they were worried about the economic situation. He lied to them and said that he'd make things better based on a neoliberal austerity agenda, among his first measures was sacking tens of thousands of public workers, as if that's going to improve the Argentinian economy.
Right.
Yeah. And just look at that, the logic of that, which is the same logic that applies in the United States. You know, if you sack people or pay them zero salaries or discourage them to work for more than a year, that's going to benefit the economy.
Right. They're not going to buy anything. They can't afford anything. And if there's any available, they're on relief. So it's an expense to the government, non-productive expense.
Yeah. And so the austerity arguments is many, many, you know, very, very well-respected economists like Dean Baker, you know, even Paul Krugman, and those kinds of economists.
Bourgeois.
And they've been arguing that kind of stuff in the States for years, and to no avail. And you can see both in the United States and Argentina that the arguments of the neoliberal economists, what Michael Hudson so rightly called Michael Hudson, of all the economists, saying, along with Dean Bacon, people like Steve Keen, the Australian, and a couple of others, very few others, were the ones that predicted the financial crisis of 2007-2008.
Me too, by the way. I did too.
Yeah, right. Don DeBar, right.
I'll tell you something. And my job at the time, I was working at a title insurance agency, the real estate market. And at the end of the year, the firm that I was working at, the man who used to own it, who passed, who had hired me, I knew most of my life, every year would put out a newsletter at the end of the year to send to his clients with prognostications. And I predicted that the real estate market was going to collapse, that there would be no quick comeback this time. It would be unprecedented in terms of how long it would take to clear out, if ever. And my friend who was running the business at the time struck it and wrote something to put under my name that was sort of cheery, happy, thanks for your business instead. But I wrote that in December of 2007.
Right, okay. So, and that what that means, Don, is that you are a real economist. And
I can add and subtract. That's all it means. You could look at what was happening. It was obvious, even to me.
Yeah, and that's what Dean Bacon, Michael Hudson, and Steve Keen, and all these other guys who predicted the crisis were saying. Look, it's crazy that the junk economists who dominate economic policy making are saying that everything's all right, because it was so obvious there was a massive housing bubble that was going to have a huge impact on the economy of the United States through the end of 2000, 2008. And even the guys like Mike Whitney, who aren't economists, but who have made themselves economists, saying he writes a lot for Counterpunch, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. And people like Mike Whitney were kind of trying to amplify as best they could the diagnosis, or the prognosis, as you put it, of real economists about what was going to happen. And everything that you and people who, you know, the economists like you, who are looking at real things in the real economy in the United States and not listening to the neoliberal propaganda from the phony economy of, and everything that you and those guys were talking about is happening in Argentina. I mean, Mauricio Macri is imposing the most stupid, and really, really stupid, from the point of view of the well-being of most people in Argentina, policies, economic policies, that only benefit the tiny elite, of which Mauricio Macri is the paradigmatic representative. And that's what he represents. So the fact that Barack Obama, who has defended Wall Street and protected Wall Street and protected their bonuses and made it possible for the financial sector not only to survive but actually to consolidate their political power over the United States economy, the fact that Barack Obama, that, you know, that has been his role since he was elected in, when was it, 2008?
Yeah, 2008, yeah.
Right, and that has been his role. He has been the Wall Street shill sitting there in the White House pretending to represent the North American people, the people of the United States.
Yep, even before he was elected, actually, because the big thing that he did in September, 2 months before the election of 2008, was when the Congress had voted down the bailout package for the banks, he went around and lobbied the Democrats. This was after, like, the largest outpouring of public sentiment on any issue in the history of the United States, and maybe the world, millions of emails telling Congress not to do it, and they voted it down. And he went out, he strong-armed, because he was soaring in the polls, he strong-armed all these Democrats in Congress to pass it, and it did pass.
Yeah, and what was the name of the Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson?
Yeah, Paulson, yeah.
And he was trying to push through this $700 billion boondoggle package for his Wall Street mates at Goldman Sachs and all the others. Anyway, and that's, you know, that's all history. But what's happening now is kind of in Argentina that Barack Obama is fulfilling the same role. And he's going to turn up on the 40th anniversary of the military coup that destroyed Argentina's economy. Because that's what the military coup, it not only amounted to an assault by the Argentina's corporate elite, of which Mauricio Macri and his family were a part. They presented themselves as being neutral and, oh, it's something that we don't have any control over. They very much supported the military coup in Argentina.
They cashed the checks, right? They got checks, they cashed the checks, yeah.
Well, yeah, and of course, remember, 1976, who was then in power? And it was Henry Kissinger still, mm-hmm. Wasn't it? And Gerald Ford, was it not?
Yes, that's right.
In 1976?
Yep.
And so you had the same shills for the U.S. corporate elites that had kind of sustained the Vietnam War, and then they lost Vietnam, and they were determined. You remember Che Guevara saying, "What we need in Latin America is one too many Vietnams," and Henry Kissinger, and as a representative of the foreign policy formulation of the United States, North American, and also their European colleagues, corporate elites, were determined that they would not lose Latin America. That's how they put it.
Yep.
We can't afford to lose Latin America, as though Latin America somehow belonged to the U.S. corporate elite. Mm-hmm. And so what they did was they very, very deliberately supported the coup in Chile, mm-hmm. in 1973. Mm-hmm. And then 3 years later, they absolutely firmly supported the military dictatorship in Argentina, at the same time as people like Gene Kirkpatrick, for example, who, and those politicians from Republican politicians from that era, we're talking about how the mission of the United States is to spread liberty and democracy around the world. You know, and just such gross hypocrisy, the same kind of gross hypocrisy that we're seeing at the moment, by which the United States government and its NATO allies is supporting terrorist forces against the Syrian government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just so in 1976, the version of what now we're seeing as the support for terrorist activity against legitimately elected governments in Syria, Argentina, and elsewhere. And in those days, it was absolutely explicit. And the United States government supported the military coup in Argentina, and they dressed it up as kind of, well, we don't have any control over events in Argentina. But of course, they very much supported that coup. And if you read documents, historical documents, about the exchanges between U.S. diplomats and their counterparts in the rest of the region, and it's very clear that that the United States supported the coup. And what happened in the coup? What happened in the coup was that, and we can use the word fascist without putting any inverted commas around it,
right.
In terms of the 1976 coup, because the military, the senior military officers that engineered that coup in Argentina were very, very explicitly right-wing, committed to the most right-wing fascist policies, a close alliance with the corporate sector in Argentina for the national good. That's how they projected it. We had to do this coup in order to protect national well-being and promote the prosperity of the Argentinian people against socialist ideas that were going to destroy both the Argentina's economy and its society. That was their argument.
Mm-hmm.
And Mauricio Macri, who's now the president of Argentina, and his family were very much part of that agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what happened during the coup from 1986 to 1983, 7 years, 30,000 people were disappeared. No, mostly from the middle classes, but also from working class people in the organized labor movement. But the most people were middle class people who supported even social democrat ideas, never mind communist ideas. And what happened to those people? They were viciously tortured. And one of the interesting things is that you have testimony from Jewish survivors, survivors of Jewish origin, that they were tortured under portraits of Adolf Hitler.
I mean, the ideology is, you know, lifted right out of Nazi Germany.
Right. And so, you know, for that, what are we going to see on March the 23rd, March 24th, when Barack Obama visits Argentina? We're going to see the crocodile tears. We're going to see the classic Barack Obama hypocrisy, for which he will go down in history as the, you know, the U.S. president who is most blatant in the hypocrisy of his public declarations, because he's going to go to Argentina and he's going to shed crocodile tears about U.S. support for the Argentinian military coup that destroyed Argentina through 7 years. And what happened after that? Why, in 1999, 2000, 2001, was Argentina in crisis? It was in crisis largely because during the military coup, the military regime indebted itself to Wall Street to the tune of something like $40 billion. And as Michael Hudson, this exceptional economist that the United States is lucky enough to have but doesn't listen to, has pointed out, the key thing about once you get into debt in the capitalist financial system, you are then subject to the magic of compound interest. And so those $40 million over the years turned into the massive debt that Argentina couldn't afford to pay at the end of 1999, 2000, 2001. And so what's happening in Argentina now is that after 8, 10, 12 years of very sound public administration under the social democrat governments of Néstor Kirchner and Cristina Fernández de Kirchner, Néstor Kirchner's widow, and Argentina recovered. And because as a result of the collapse in international commodity prices, the Argentinian economy found itself in the doldrums. And Mauricio Macri took advantage of that to say, well, we can do better. The right wing is somehow magically going to make everything better and bring prosperity to Argentina in 2016. You know, how cynical can you get? I mean, they're going to do the exact opposite. They're going to inflict the same kind of misery on the majority of ordinary people in Argentina that Barack Obama and his team, his Goldman Sachs team, have inflicted on the people of the United States.
Yeah, they're cutting the check again, right? I mean, they're getting ready to cut the check.
Right. So, I feel very bitter. I feel very strongly about the sheer hypocrisy of Barack Obama as the inheritor of Henry Kissinger's, you know, he's the inheritor of Henry Kissinger's foreign policy from the 1970s. You know, and there's very little change in what they're doing. And he's going to go to Argentina and give his stamp of approval to a government that is attacking the majority of the Argentinian people in the same way that his government has attacked the majority of people in the United States.
So he's going to be standing with the heir to that coup. And he's not going to be standing with the heir to the people that fought the coup, which is, of course, in the National Assembly.
Sure. It'll be very interesting to see who he meets.
The Congress, I mean.
Will he meet the Madres de la Plaza de Mayo? And the Madres de la Plaza de Mayo are a group of truly heroic women who, during decades, have been campaigning to try and find out what happened to the children and the grandchildren of the people who had disappeared through the dirty war in Argentina for 7 years, and just to give an idea of how dirty the war was in moral terms, what the interrogators used to do was they'd torture their victims and then get them to sign documents signing over their property to the torturers. And that is what led, for example, to the case of the notorious case of Ricardo Carvalho, who some years ago, he was at one of the Argentinian torturers, and he made himself rich by extorting under torture from his victims documents that gave him and his fellow torturers power over the property and goods of the people they were torturing.
Amazing.
And subsequently he moved to Mexico for something. Well, no, actually, let me get this right. He moved to El Salvador and started up a business there where he became the main contractor to the Salvadoran government under the right-wing Arena government for issuing driving licenses in El Salvador. And so, and then he did very well there, and then he moved on to Mexico, and he did exactly the same thing there in Mexico under the administration of the right wing of Vicente Fox. So then ultimately, finally, and the Spanish judicial authorities, because of Carvalho's involvement in the murder and torture of some Spanish citizens during the 76-83 military dictatorship, extradited him to Spain, and he's now serving time in Spain, as far as I'm aware, for his crimes. And but he's one of the few. He's one of the very few Argentinian torturers that, in the horrible crimes against humanity, who's actually paid a judicial penalty and is actually serving time. Because most of those guys have benefited from the difficulty in Argentina of trying to come to terms with that dreadful past.
For sure. They're part of the resistance to that, too, of course. And some of them, I'm sure, if they're not holding office directly, you know, people that are holding office are there because of their patronage.
Right.
Because they didn't take the money away from them.
And now, of course, they're protected by Mauricio Macri and his colleagues, many of whom are very closely associated with the United States government administration of Barack Obama.
Hey, about Obama, by the way, and that meeting. Just for context, I'm hoping that there isn't a small group of people that come out of the survivors that decides to sit down with him and, you know, for photo ops or whatever. Because Obama has been masterful at that. He just had to sit down with people from the Black Lives Movement, for example. One person notably declined and made a public statement about why. But there were people that'll sit down, you know, for the star value or whatever. And it'll look like, yeah, he had that meeting with them.
Oh, yeah, and you can bet that there'll be those photo ops and that they'll be widely broadcast in the North American and European media, you know, and Barack Obama, the great reconciler, the great unifier. And how cynical can you get?
Right, because there won't be any restorative justice done as a consequence,
of course,
which is
not
the demand that they have.
And justice is the last thing that Barack Obama is ever going to stand up for.
That's right.
So then the other date on his tour of Latin America is going to be a meeting in Havana. And he'll be meeting with the Cuban government there on the 21st and the 22nd of March. And presumably they'll be talking about how to advance the reconciliation and the rapprochement between the Cuban authorities and the United States authorities. But the nitty-gritty there is, will he announce an end to the blockade? The Cubans and the Cuban authorities and the U.S. authorities have already negotiated a bunch of stuff around kind of minor regulations to do with trade, to do with direct flights. And
right. Travel.
So, yeah, travel, stuff like that, tourism. But the nitty-gritty is, will the United States government lift its commercial and financial sanctions against the Cuban government, which have been quite illegal for 50 years? Yeah. So it seems to me that it's possible but unlikely that on March the 21st and 22nd, Barack Obama will say, right, we're going to ask Congress to lift the blockade.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.